This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 19, Running with a Suitcase. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we find out how a cricket ball is like running with a suitcase. We talk about the other side of pressure and how to apply it on teams. And we help a killer batsman become even more killer against spin. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time for another edition of the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. If you want to play better cricket, you're in absolutely the right place because we've got some fine minds to help you improve your game, whether it's batting, bowling, fielding, or any other aspect of the game. I don't know about making the tees, but perhaps that we need to get in a specialist tea lady for that one. But otherwise, we've got a great panel lined up for you. I'm David Hinchliffe. I'm in charge of things. I keep my hand firmly on the tiller. And helping me on this ride is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. How are you, Garras?
I'm very well. I'm from the Isle of Wight, but I don't know anything about sailing or anything like that.
Neither.
So stay off those references, please, mate.
Yeah, me neither. I'm just trying to use an analogy. And I don't know how much Sam Lavery knows about sailing, but he certainly knows plenty about cricket. He's the cricket pro at Portsmouth Grammar School. How are you doing, Lavers?
Very well, thanks. Sailing knowledge limited despite living by the sea for the last 10 years and coaching the Navy side, I still know nothing about it.
Yeah, stick to the bat and the ball and leave the sails alone.
Absolutely.
Berners, how's your sailing knowledge?
I'm a keen sailor.
Are you? Yeah. You know all about tacking?
I know everything. I always go with a life jacket as well, just in case, because I can't swim, mind, but I'm a keen sailor.
Well, that's bold.
I like the shout of "I know everything."
There's nothing you can't teach me about sailing. So let's
just leave it there. Berners can go, I think.
Anchors, sails. I've been down to Gunner's Wharf. Don't you worry about me, Lavers.
And I think Berners would be on a sailing podcast soon. So if you're into that, then make sure you tune in. But
it's called Ocean Wave.
Ocean Wave. Very nice. Let's head into cricket waters, though, because that's more of our area, isn't it? And one of the things that I wanted to talk about from a personal perspective this week, but I think it applies across the board, is pressure, and in particular the other side of pressure. Because when you think about pressure, and when you think about coaching pressure or playing under pressure, you kind of think about how you deal with that situation when you're under pressure yourself. But what we certainly haven't talked about on the podcast is the other way around. What happens when you want to apply pressure on the opposition? And the reason I started thinking about this is that my club team has started with two absolute crushing wins, over 100 run wins in the first two games of the season with a game rained off in between them. And we were talking about how games aren't going to always be that easy and how we keep applying pressure on opposition in the way that we've been doing it in the first couple of games. So I wanted to get the views of the panel about this and what you do to help players and teams start to apply pressure and keep applying pressure to the opposition.
Well, I think pressure and how you apply pressure is down to your basics pretty much, because I think pressure is exerted on the opposition as a bowling side. Let's take the fielding side of things first. When we hit our lengths, when we hit our areas, when we restrict the boundary options, really to me, pressure comes down fundamentally to you as a bowler or a fielder getting your basics and your fundamentals right. And the more you do that, the more pressure will be exerted on the batter. You know, you can then go into what conversations you have with batters and all of that sort of thing. But ultimately, to me, it's about getting your basics right on a consistent basis and enough of you around that batter at any given time getting your basics right. And inevitably every player is going to be under pressure at that point.
So to you, it's not a conscious thing. It's not a thing where you are saying, let's do something extraordinary. or different. Let's just apply the things that we want to apply as well as we can possibly apply them, and that stops the that completely chokes the opposition from being able to do their things as well as they can.
I completely think that that is it. And obviously there are some little nuances that go alongside that. For example, you may have somebody who's fast, really fast, and therefore the pressure can be exerted not just from getting your skills right, but also that physical element and that fear element. And I think we saw bits and in the over the Ashes series, didn't we, when Mitchell Johnson was cranking it up, and that's another line of pressure that gets added on top of the fact that in that Ashes series, somebody like Harris and Siddle were just banging out their lengths. The slip catchers were going to catch anything that moved. People like Warner was at point, and he was hunting that ball down. So to me, it's about getting those bits right, and we can add in things like the physical pressure. We can add in, a conversation or trying to get under somebody's skin if you want to. But all of that is pretty irrelevant unless everybody is getting their basics right. And certainly when I've played decent level of cricket, the thing that stood out for me was just the skill level and the relentless nature of the fielders and the bowlers to execute some fairly fundamental and basic plans and skills. And they just do it more often.
Yeah, of course, it's Michael Holding, who famously said very little when he was bowling, because, you know, he didn't really need to. When you're bowling, 95 miles an hour at somebody, you don't really need to say much to apply pressure to them. So, Lavers, the basics, that's a great shout from Gareth. Do the basics as well as you can, and that's going to naturally apply pressure. Is there anything you can add to that?
Well, I think one thing that a phrase that you said there was really interesting was, you don't need to do something extraordinary. And I think there are two types of how you go about taking wickets a lot of the time. And you can look at short-term methods or long-term methods. And I think generally we look to try and take wickets the long-term way a lot of the time, because that is the building pressure way. And it's having long-term goals of not, I need to take a wicket this ball, but I'm trying to create a situation that produces a wicket. And doing something extraordinary is more the short-term plan of, I need to produce some sort of skill or something here that is going to take a wicket right now. And there is still plenty of place for that. And there are situations in games where you have to have immediate results and immediate success. But invariably, we try to encourage long-term goals, trying to go through processes that are going to create a wicket over the next period of time rather than right now. And pressure is exactly that, and exactly what Gareth has said. If you all do the simple things, if you all are in the right places, if you make good decisions on fields, if you make good decisions and execute your skills well as bowlers, and the fielders back up the bowlers in the right way, then you can create that pressure that you've talked about, and you can achieve those long-term methods of taking wickets, which generally are more reliable and leak less runs along the way. Yeah. Rather than trying to do something extraordinary, not that there's not a place for that, because it's equally an important part of the game when it's required.
Now, Bernard, you and I both, we play club cricket. There's a lot of mistakes that happen. I mean, there's a lot of mistakes happen at international level. So, at club level, it's going to be that much more. Being really good at the basics doesn't always pan out. How do you see applying pressure in the games that you play?
Yeah, in club cricket, I think it's harder trying to actually get the momentum of asserting pressure consistently throughout a given time frame. You know, people's concentration goes in and out, and it's often happens as a byproduct of a situation like a team being 100 for none. Suddenly, everyone pulls their socks up. But I find that it really works well in small kind of power key phases where you pick up a couple of wickets and everyone that's fielding in the ring becomes really focused and tight, and the bowler's bowling a certain line and length. I just think it just all boils down to consistency and the fact that you can't keep that pressurized momentum up for the length of time that you're out there. So I think what I'm trying to get to is that when you do have those periods, you need to make the most of them and kind of just hope in a way that they occur as frequently as possible, rather than the intense kind of cauldron that you would ideally set for the whole 50 or 45 overs.
I think there's I think you see quite a few. I see a few teams do it in club cricket, and we've done it before at Burridge, and I know our school boys like to do it. Is a bit of shared leadership as well, where people take sets of five overs and they're leading there, and they're reminding everyone of what's expected of them, and they're reminding everyone of what they should be doing, and that's quite a good way just to try and maintain focus, that everyone knows they have their block of five overs.
Okay, let's finish off this section with a yes-no round. Three questions that no matter what else we want to say, we can only answer yes or no. And Berners, you've got the questions this week.
First question, praise effort over talent.
Yes.
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 Second question, leg spin is about taking wickets above all other considerations.
No.
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 Third question, the most important thing is that you play as a team.
No.
Yes.
No.
Time now for the mailbag. A couple of questions which have been sent in by readers to Pitch Vision Academy or listeners to this show. And those questions are in a competition for a prize. The best question of the week wins the online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can get in touch with us on coach@pitchvision.com if you want to send in your question and have the chance to win a prize. Berners, what's the first question this week?
First question is in from Ash, and he's saying that he's just joined an academy where they do a lot of batting practice in pairs, and they go through the usual kind of net sessions where they normally face a very defined style of bowling. It's either pace or spin, but don't get to practice against the swing ball very often. So he's just saying that a lot of the bowlers in his age group are also new to swing bowling. And he's just asking if there's any ways in which he should practice this, and especially when he's at the top of the order.
How do we make it swing for practice?
We can doctor the ball is the first thing. And I don't necessarily mean by doing some of the things that we occasionally see on a game of cricket, where people start scratching it up or start tampering with the ball. But we can do things as coaches. So, for example, we can make one side of the ball heavier by applying tape onto one side of the flat side of the ball. We can make it more shiny by getting some boot polish out on one side of the ball, which will obviously change the aerodynamics around it. There are lots of things along those lines that we can do, even getting a tennis ball and applying tape to it, or buying some of the balls that are readily available on the market, which have got a rubber coating on one side of a tennis ball. Even though it's a tennis ball, it's good practice to get used to an object coming towards you that is swinging laterally. So there's lots of different things that you can do in changing the dynamics of any ball that's coming at you, which can prepare you for the ball moving laterally through the air.
Lavers, the question I've got is related to how you make that practice a little bit more systematic. You can have bowlers who are bowling the ball at you, but obviously they're going to be bowling different lines, different lengths, different amounts of swing, in swing, out swing, that kind of thing. How do you sort of make that a little bit more systematic, or should you just sort of leave it to just watching the ball in nets?
Well, it probably depends at what phase of your practice you're at. If you're completely new to it, then you maybe want to have a little bit of structure where you can learn from a certain type of bowling. So if you've got a guy who can swing it in a little bit and a guy who can swing it away a bit, and you maybe struggle to play both, then continually going from one to the other is maybe a little bit more difficult. Whereas if you can spend a little bit more time facing bowlers in overs and learning against one style of bowling at one time, so you can focus solely on that and then switch across to the other side at a later time, then that makes maybe the batting experience a little bit easier to understand what you can do against the ball. Ultimately, it's practicing against swings is quite a tricky one, because you do need someone to go and swing the ball. Mm. So it may be that the focus has got to be on the bowlers initially, and maybe helping them develop their skills slightly. Conditions aren't always going to suit swing, and sometimes you'll have to accept that. But There are ways of going around it. Obviously, if you do have access to a bowling machine, it's not the same as the ball coming out of the hand, but you can put swing on a bowling machine quite easily. Similarly, with a sidearm, it's quite easy to replicate some swing. That's quite easy to swing either in or away with a little bit of practice. So that's a good thing for the coach to be looking towards, and the bowlers as well, because the fast bowlers don't want to bowl 15 to 20 overs in an evening. They might bowl a few, but if they can then take over duties, or batsmen who don't bowl can take over duties with a sidearm, then again, that's a useful addition to training.
Now, Ash hasn't said specifically what resources he's got available to him, but assuming, for example, that maybe it's just bats and balls that he can just basic equipment, so he hasn't got access to sidearms, bowling machines, that kind of thing. If he just says, right, we're gonna doctor the ball, we're gonna have the ball that's make sure that it swings a lot more, and then we're gonna have guys bowling it. Is it going to help him improve in that open net situation, do you think? Or is it just too open to be able to make any significant strides forward?
Oh, I think he can improve within that. If you're exposed to it, then you'll come up with your own strategies. If you're exposed to a lateral swinging ball, then you'll come up with your own strategies through trial and error, which is how most of us learn, to be brutally honest with you. Now, you can have a coach telling you to play late and play it straight and all of those sorts of things, but ultimately, most people will learn through being exposed to it. So I think just listening to the things that we've mentioned here would make a big difference. Going back to the doctoring of a ball, we can also do it conventionally. And I think one of the arts of cricket, which is beginning to get lost in a lot of club cricket, is the ability to shine a ball. And when we're having a practice and we're bowling in nets, what generally happens is the guy runs up, bowls the ball, it gets hit, he picks it up, he shines it a couple of times, he gets to the end of his mark, and then he runs in and bowls the ball. And over the course of that net session, the ball degrades and obviously doesn't move around so much. But one of the things we can do, we've all got players that aren't bowlers who do their batting and then finish. Why don't you designate them as the ball shiners, so they can actually increase their skill, which is very useful when it comes to selecting people. If I've got somebody who's a brilliant ball shiner, who's always going to be in the inner circle, and he averages 35, and I've got another guy who averages 37 but isn't a ball shiner, I'd rather have the guy who shines the ball that creates opportunities with us to get lateral movement. So I've got two players presently in the first team, and their sole role when they're in the field is to field as well as they can, but to make sure that the ball's in a condition that our bowlers can use it properly. So get that practicing in practices, get standing at the net instead of just watching, and help the bowlers to swing it, which in turn will help the batters to be exposed to swinging deliveries.
I think that's a really good point, and you're going to get... straight away you're going to get four big 6-footers on your side who want you in the team, aren't you?
Yeah,
and that's what you want. You want the backing of people around you. You want the coach to want you there, but you ultimately want your 10 teammates to want you there as well. And if you're playing a really valuable role and you're turning bowlers into guys who are averaging 25 with the ball to averaging 20 with the ball because of the work you're doing throughout the innings, then that's invaluable, really. I've got a bit of a pet hate with the shining of the ball as well, and I don't know what you guys see where you are, but every now and then I'll see the ball get thrown to mid off, and he's waiting for the bowler to return, and suddenly you'll just see him lick his hand and smother the new ball in his saliva, and suddenly this brand new nice hard dry cricket ball that's swinging around is just getting weighed down. And it's not being beneficial. It's not helping. It might look like it's shiny, but as I said to the boys at the start of the year, and we try and talk about it at the start of each season with the first team, we're trying to get one side of the ball to travel faster. Okay, and if you imagine running along as fast as you possibly can, and then you imagine running along with a suitcase, you're only going to get slower. And if you add a load of saliva to that side of the ball, do it every ball for 10 overs, it's not going to speed it up, it's only going to slow it down. So try and keep it dry, and if it does start to rough up and you can't polish it out or shine it out, then maybe a tiny little bit, but as much as you can, keep it dry and keep it fast.
Great analogy. Right, let's leave it there. What's the next question, Berners?
From Axiom, and he's saying that he's a killer batsman and he murders all types of bowling. However, there is a twist. on Axiom's killer batting, and that is spin. And he struggles somewhat against guys who like to fire it in a little bit, especially picking up the line and length of the delivery. So sounds like he gets a bit stuck in the crease. He doesn't know whether to go forwards or back. And funnily enough, he does okay against the Yorker, probably because that's a nice, big, juicy half volley. And once again, his killer batting comes into play. So how can we help him?
Obviously, mindset. He's looking to go and hopefully going to go and hit the ball. And being a confident batsman as you are, it'd be interesting to see what the conditions are when the ball's being bowled faster. I think because sometimes you can have a quicker bowler who's a defensive type of bowler, and sometimes you can have a bowler who's actually bowling into the surface to make it grip more, and that will depend on the conditions you're playing in. So. First of all, it'd be nice to know that. A lot of the time, I think sometimes we just find that spin reduces our space. And one thing you said was, do I get forwards or do I get back? Now, you're actually going along the right path, thinking of do I get forward or do I get back? Because too often people do neither and they just get stuck in the middle. The one thing we want to do is just have options. And if we can think about the options we've got on the front foot. So if I get out to the ball, what could I do? Could I drive? Can I chip? Can I sweep? Can I paddle? Can I push and go? And similarly on the back foot, what can I do? Can I cut and use the pace of the ball, or is the ball coming into me and limiting me for space? Can I deflect ones? I think sometimes it's about our mentality and working out what are we trying to do. Are we solely trying to hit boundaries? Are we solely trying to rotate with singles, or are we looking for a blend of the two? So look at the options you've got and look at the options you're trying to develop, and then see how you can try and apply those to a situation against a given bowler. The other thing would be good to do as well is you talked about it being the pace of the bowler. It'd be interesting to see if potentially there's a style of bowler as well that's a bit quicker. So is it a left arm spinner who's angling the ball back into you, or is it an off spinner who's sliding it past the off stump and the odd one's gripping and coming back in, or is it even a leg spinner who's pushing you through quite flat? So it'd be interesting to just do a little bit more analysis on what type of bowler it is, to see if it is more than just a guy who's firing it through a little bit quicker and it's actually someone who's bowling a particular style as well.
And I completely agree with Sam's views there in terms of really identifying what the problem is and who it is, and you know, limit your game. And one of the things that I found most fascinating about somebody like a Steve Waugh is that one of his best innings that he played was in Chennai against Anil Kumble on a fifth-day wicket, where in the first innings he blazed 70 and played quite well, but realised that his game couldn't be adapted into the last day of the game. And he actually analysed what the balls that were causing him problems were, which areas were going to give him no risk of getting out, and he just played to those. And the similar nature to your question is, you know, where can I score? Where are my present scoring areas? What ball is causing me problems? What type of bowler is causing me problems? And therefore, how can I deal with it? And it might be as simple as just developing one shot specifically for that type of bowler, which then opens up the rest of your game and gives you that confidence. Interestingly, that you say you don't pick up line and length, yet you do manage to play the Yorker. I wonder what interference and noise is going around in your head, because if there was a length of ball which was generally going to cause you problems in identifying that length, it would be Yorker, but you're coping with that. So again, some positive self-talk I think would probably help you in terms of being able to pick that line and length. I don't think you've got a problem with it. If you can pick up a Yorker, you can pick up any length of ball. So so again, telling yourself that you can be successful against this guy, telling yourself that I can look to get forward and do this, that and the other, or I can look to go back and do this, that and the other, is really important. So some positive affirmation, as well as the work that Sam suggested and I suggested in developing one shot that can cope against this particular type of bowler that you're struggling against, will work really well.
I think, though, obviously we're looking at maybe medium-term goals if we're looking to develop a method. But short-term, if you've got a game tomorrow, just also, I mean, you're obviously, being a killer batsman, you're confident in your play against quick bowling. So it might be that you're playing with someone who's confident and quite adept at playing spin. So make them aware that, if you can manage it, if you can, try and you can take on the quicks and you can play that as your role. And ideally, we want to have a 50-50 share of what we're doing, and we want to have skills all around. But if our skills are better suited to one thing, then try in the short term to just find a role which gets you down the other end. And Gareth said one shot there is all you need. And if you've got a range of skills available to you, you can then identify what works for you on that day in those conditions, get down the other end, and hopefully there's a seamer coming down the other end where you can fill your boots.
It's the old boycott method of playing very fast bowling, isn't it, from the non-striker's end?
Absolutely.
same principle applies. But yeah, that's a great final tip. And now it's time for the soapbox. 60 seconds on the clock, and Berners standing on the soapbox ready to go. Will he stay within the minute? That's the question that I've got. That's the question I've got every time Berners comes onto the soapbox. Let's find out. Your time starts now.
Well, my one this week relates a little bit to some of the discussion earlier on in the show with regarding pressure and running between the wickets. It's been a trait of mine for quite some time, but just running the first run really hard. And I always think there's so much more value in running hard between the wickets. Often 15-20 runs per innings, I think, are often lost just between poor communication, lack of pressure, lack of ambition to really create that pressure on the fielder. And it just happens time and time again, no matter how many times it's brought up in team talks and conversations, and you talk to your partner in the middle. You've got to run the first one hard, identify players with bad arms, take them on, and turn those ones into twos and threes.
Oh, he's short.
I think Berners had a prime opportunity there to say turn twos into threes and threes into fours and fours into fives until the time ran out, didn't he?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that'd be brilliant.
We just give you a shout on 60 seconds.
And that is the end of the show for this week. We are going to do a couple of things before we leave, though. One of those things is to decide on the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. We had Ash's question regarding practicing against swing bowling, and Axiom's question about being a killer batsman against spin. Gareth, we already know the answer, but which one did you prefer?
There's only one winner this week, is it? It's got to be Axiom killer. For a number of different things. He's the first person that I've heard call himself a killer batsman, and I don't think there's enough of those guys out there. So I want some more killer batters sending in some questions in the next few weeks. It gives you a great chance of winning the prize.
Yep, it's good to know that even the killers have their weaknesses, and they're prepared to admit it, and they're prepared to work on it. So, you know, that's good news. Now, Berners, if someone wanted to send in their question, there's a killer batsman out there, a killer bowler out there, they send in a question, they want to win a prize, how would they send in their question?
They can email us, coach@pitchvision.com, or give us a call at 020-323-97543.
That's correct. Our Twitter is at Pitch Vision Acad. Our Facebook is facebook.com/Pitch Vision Academy. Lots of fun things going on there. Still a very, very, very busy part of the Pitch Vision Academy community. And this show itself is available every week on a Friday. You can download it to your computer or iPod or iPad or iPhone or whatever other device that you have. And to do that, you go onto iTunes. And you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, click on the subscribe button. If you don't want to do that, you want to use something else, go to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link for all the details on how to subscribe. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Labours. Cheers, Berners.
Thanks, David. Cheers, thanks,
everybody.
Guys.
Thank you.
Bye. Killer show.
Killer show.